Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman, sharing stories of our food. And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman. I love this. Stop giving power to those who don't believe in science, or worse than that, to those who pretend they don't believe in science for their own self-interest, says Harrison Ford at the auditorium of engaged stakeholders at the most recent Global Climate Action Summit held a couple weeks ago in San Francisco. Are you kidding me? We got Han Solo giving a rallying cry to generations of folks from all walks of life, all who look up to this guy. It's fantastic. I love it. Maybe the only thing better than that would be if this ardent environmentalist threw his hat in the ring for the 2020 election. Something to think about there, Harrison, if you're listening. Well, joining Dr. Indiana Jones as a speaker at this marquee event in San Francisco, dedicated to amplifying action against climate change and to validate the U.S. commitment to some of those actions, at least at a grassroots level, for climate remediation. We had mayors, governors, community leaders from all over the world join household names and celebrities like Al Gore, Dave Matthews, Gina McCarthy, John Kerry, Eric Solom, who is the executive director of the UN Environmental Program, Jane Goodall, Tom Steyer, John Podesta, and so many more. And from what I heard, it was an amazing 2 days, or maybe 3 days, 2 days of speaking engagement. Our guest today was one of the lucky ones to attend this conference. Today, we welcome Shauna Sadowski, who's the head of sustainability and natural and organic operating units at General Mills. Hey, Shauna, welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. If you could, we'd love, I'm dying to know. I didn't get the opportunity to go, so I'd love to know more about your perspective on what happened at this event, some of the interesting things that you learned. And were there any new proclamations or declarations or interesting concepts that came out of this?
Yeah, it was truly an honor and a privilege to attend, certainly as a delegate. And I have to say, I loved your introduction on Harrison Ford. In so many ways, actually, his remarks were, I thought, one of the most compelling and hopeful in terms of what we could do. But before kind of getting into, what I really enjoyed from his presentation, I mean, the event itself brought together more than 4,000 people, I believe, everyone from policymakers, business people, nonprofit organizations, indigenous groups. I mean, it was a whole level of high-level profile, high-profile dignitaries, executives. And I would be remiss if I didn't say there were also protests, because part of that is the scene that I walked into when I went there, in part because I think so many people are seeking a voice on this important topic of climate change. And so I think the opportunity that Jerry Brown, Governor Jerry Brown of California, brought in hosting this forum was to really demonstrate the potential for everyone to get involved, even when the national government, such as the United States, isn't currently part of the Paris Agreement. But there are many, many other nations who are and are pledging to do work, and there are many corporate executives who are wanting to make commitments, and many subnationals in the state of California who want to step up. And I think that's really what I, gleaned from the event, and certainly felt very fortunate to be a part of the glitz and the glam, because there was a lot of that as well. But there were many announcements made. I think that, there were, I think, nearly 400 companies there who, like basically global companies, healthcare providers, cities, states, and regions that are setting 100% renewable energy targets, and including companies with collective annual revenues of more than $2.75 trillion. So big, announcements. Many companies were talking about how they can align their work in line with the science of the Paris Agreement. I think there was a lot of people on stage to talk about that. And I'd say a lot of the focus was very much on clean energy and decarbonization, which have their place. And I think that for me, you know, I appreciated that. But what I appreciated more, and getting back to what you were talking about actually with Harrison Ford, is Harrison Ford was actually one of the few people to recognize the importance of nature and how we need to have nature as a part of the conversation. We cannot forget nature was one of the things that he said. And Jane Goodall actually also elevated the importance of forests. And this is actually a new campaign that she is a part of that's being launched called The Forgotten Solution, which is talking about the importance of forests, producing food more sustainably, and improving land use. One of the quotes or one of the stats that she had mentioned, which I think is very remarkable, and it speaks to kind of the overall issues here on the Global Climate Action Summit, that when it comes to the forgotten solution, as she's talking about it, they're less than 1% of the conversation, and they receive less than 1% of climate funding. So when we think about the opportunities and how that, you know, and yet they represent 1/3 of the solution. And so that's kind of the whole idea here is they are infinitesimal in terms of the numbers, yet they represent 30% and what an opportunity it is. And that's why I appreciated some of the words from Harrison Ford, who was representing Conservation International, and from Jane Goodall, try and shift that narrative. And so in any event, I appreciated being there. It was a lot to take in. And there were tons of affiliate events. So in addition to the two-day summit itself, there were all these affiliate events, and I got to attend one that the California Department of Food and Agriculture put on, hosted by Secretary of Agriculture Karen Ross. And there it was very much focused on agriculture and the role of agriculture in helping to address climate change. So I appreciated that there certainly were affiliate events going on. But I think for the summit itself, I would have liked to see more of that because those being kind of the change makers and the leaders who can both take action in their own work, in their own businesses, in their own nonprofits, but also people who are looking to fund and create policies that can enable. We need to really change the conversation from one of like just carbon is bad, get rid of carbon, to carbon is actually a part of a cycle, and we have an opportunity through you know, agriculture. I think this is certainly the area I work in, how it's a part of a complex ecosystem, which is dynamic, it's complex, but we can actually help to cycle it back as it should be. And we as people and food that we eat are inherently connected to nature and natural systems. So we can really make a difference in our conscientious use of resources and looking toward nature-based solutions. So I put a lot in there, I realize, but I think those were some of my takeaways of just the opportunities there are to continue to elevate the importance of our natural resources.
That's fantastic. I'm taking so many notes. I'm drooling with rebuttal questions back to you, but I'm going to stick with the channel of the Forgotten Solutions and looking at reconnecting with natural order. And as you said, the actual act of eating is really taking parts of the environmental process and putting it in our body to keep us healthy. I mean, we can't get much more connected to the environment than that. So let's explore that a little bit. And you said the main event was a bit maybe missing in curriculum or information or knowledge share from leaders around our role in food production. What did you see that was useful that maybe could start to cross the chasm and get more folks involved in this conversation, both consumers and policymakers and influential leaders? And then was there any other discussions, not just about kind of the business as usual and where we're at now, but many of the discussions of 9 billion by 2050, how can we sustain with current approach and the fact that we just can't continue as business as usual and we got to change our operating model?
Yeah. Well, the presence and the role of food and ag was less obvious. It did come through again through the Forgotten Solution, and there was some commitments being made as it relates to deforestation, which of course relates to food production, insofar as land use and land use changes. So it was there, but I felt like it was more at the periphery. And so I think that's where I really gravitated toward leaders like Jane Goodall and, you know, Harrison Ford, who really spoke about the need to elevate it. And there were also presentations from folks in the indigenous communities who also elevated the importance of nature. So I wouldn't say that it was completely missing. It wasn't completely absent, but it wasn't the front and center focus. I think still so much of it is around emissions reductions insofar as energy use. And so really around the renewables, the opportunities there, the decarbonization, and in transportation, again, all of things which play important roles, and I don't want to negate that, but that natural resource connection, I would have liked to have seen more with it and kind of elevate both. So, you know, I think of the work that Paul Hawken and his team did through Project Drawdown, and I'm sure you're familiar with that body of work that was released last year. And for that, those conversation points to have been more elevated front and center, I think it would have been. That is something that I think can really change people's perspectives on what needs to happen. Because truly, at the end of the day, you know, we have a very linear model in place as it relates to our businesses in general and how we in life actually live, which is that kind of take, make, waste. And when you change that concept to one of take, make, renew, what you're taking takes on a whole different meaning. And I think that's the opportunity for us to really elevate what's possible. And food and agriculture is one of the best examples of that because of agriculture's inherent connection to nature and its inherent connection to these natural resources, be it soil, be it water, be it above or below ground life, and the need for those to be thriving and regenerating in order to continue to nourish and feed us as people. And it's when they get to those degraded states that we start to see the ramifications in the landscape and ultimately our health too. So I think that's where, you know, it's just, I think I see it as an opportunity. And I actually look to the affiliate event that I attended as a great example of what is possible, and because that was you know, a California-led initiative through Karen Ross's efforts and her team's efforts, and you know, she is certainly on Jerry Brown's team, and you know, the one of the things that she announced at the conference, and I think actually, well, she gave us a precursor one, but she launched the Global Soil Health Challenge in partnership with France, and France was, of course, one of the countries who created the 4 per 1,000 initiative, and so one of the spokespeople for that initiative was at the event at the California Department of Food and Ag event, and was you know talked about it in his remarks as looking to find inspiration in nature through agroecology. And to have such words come from a policymaker is just like, wow, you know, this is really, truly possible. It's not something we hear about so often, especially on the policy front. And so I give huge credit to Secretary Ross for making that partnership, making that announcement. And basically through it, she's calling on other national and subnational governments to promote the development of healthy soils within their own geographies, and then come back next year at the UN Climate Summit in New York in 2019 to report on their progress. So, you know, my hope is that this can be a start, the possibility of what can be ahead. California certainly made some inroads with some of the grants that they're making for ranchers and farmers. One of the farms actually on the tour was a farm called with the Organic Valley Cooperative, the Bordessa farm, and they just conducted a carbon farm plan earlier this year. And actually, part of that was done because Annie's, we've been longtime partners with Organic Valley for 10 years now, working with them and using their dairy and our products, and the Annie's brand products. And they did this carbon farm plan to really help them understand what practices they're doing and the potential carbon levels of carbon sequestration that they're doing using the Comet tool, and then what opportunities they have to improve even more. And so we got to go visit the farm and learn more about some of the composting systems they have in place. California is giving them a grant as part of their alternative management program to help them move from I think it's going from, they're going to move it to a, like a aeration compost instead of a kind of water filtration or water system, water-based system. So it's exciting to see kind of, again, what California can do, what it can help to ignite through some of its support programs. But there's a whole, you know, as one of the largest ag states in the country, there's a lot of opportunity to do even more.
Yeah, that's... And as more of a collective for the event itself, it sounds like it's baby steps towards systems thinking, right? Get out of the reductionist approach and reconnect us to that natural systems and natural order, which you're right. We got carbon all over the place. Let's put it in the right place. And ag is one of the best approaches to get us there. So, you know, I was reading, Sean, in your bio, you state, I believe that food companies have an opportunity and a responsibility to play a significant and positive role in creating a more sustainable food system. I work cross-functionally and throughout the industry to create programs that enable transparency to the farm and deeper understanding of how our agricultural and farming system connect to food, to the foods we eat. So if you would you tell our listening audience a bit more about your background, some of your experience in other differentiated brands like Clif and Annie's prior to General Mills acquisition, and how that has influenced you in your work you do today?
Yeah. Well, I feel very fortunate to be working in this industry and to be really looking at how business can make a positive impact. And the story of how I got here really stems from growing up on a farm. So my roots go deep in that respect, and I am the child of a farmer and a farm family. I'm one of seven who grew up in the Midwest of Canada, in Saskatchewan, Canada. So very much open sky, prairie country, very rural. And you know, that certainly had a big impact on how I thought about the way the world worked as a kid growing up, but then ultimately how I made the decisions I did later in life. And you know, growing up on a family farm, I was surrounded by nature. I was surrounded by beauty. But as a kid, it was sometimes hard to see that because the economic challenges of farming was also front and center. And so when I decided, you know, to go to college, I ended up actually getting a business degree because I looked at business as the place where people would be successful, and I wanted to have that. And over time, I realized just how much of an influence that business has on policy, that policy has on business, and that both of those have on people and the decisions that we make. And so as a farm kid, we were deeply influenced by both policy and business decisions. And so in order for me to really affect change and to give more economic opportunity to farming and to farming communities and farm families, the lever for change really would come through the business sector. And so in doing my undergraduate degree, I spent time globally in France. I learned a lot about the French culture and the importance of food. And I also spent time in D.C., Washington, D.C., working in the policy area. And so I was very fortunate to have this combined kind of degree program that took me into management consulting, working to help companies identify kind of best practices in whatever problem they were facing. But what it helped me to do was understand how to speak the language of business. And so that was kind of the segue to then take me on that next path to graduate school, which is where I did my studies at Tufts University in their Agriculture, Food, and Environment program, and which was all about the policy and science of agriculture and food systems. So taking my background in business, you know, coming from this farming community and how I thought the world worked, and putting some more, some academic parameters around it, if you will, and giving it some rigor. And the graduate program really helped to see the cross-functional nature of the food system. And coming out of that, I basically took both of those backgrounds and put them into and found a job that kind of put them together. And so it was as a consultant at a nonprofit called Business for Social Responsibility, BSR, based in San Francisco, which is where I started working with food and beverage companies in particular on sustainability issues. So one of the things that the Tufts program really brought to light was the importance of the environment and how ecology fits into this conversation as it relates to agriculture and food. And so the combined elements of these different functions and the interdisciplinary nature of the programs kind of has set me on the course as to where I am now. And so coming out of BSR, this was around the 2005 period was when I was working there. It was actually, I'll never forget it, it was the year that Lee Scott from Walmart made the statement of, like, we are going to take action on sustainability. And it was quite groundbreaking because, you know, at that point in time, most companies really weren't thinking of the supply chain. They were really thinking about their own four walls. And so that was, and it also, because of Walmart's statement, they knew they had to work in the supply chain. And so I've kind of been fortunate to work in the industry across the years as the industry has evolved and kind of looking at, you know, beyond their own four walls to seeing, you know, what is the influence I have across the supply chain and how far does the responsibility lie and what is the opportunity in addition to the responsibility. And so that's a lot of what I continue to learn about is how you bring that forward. Because most of the companies I've worked with, whether it was Clif Bar or Annie's, and now I work with additional brands, Cascadian Farm, Muir Glen, and Epic within General Mills, we don't own farms, and we don't have, in many cases, that direct connection to farms. And yet the farms are what matter so much when it comes to our impacts, when it comes to our environmental and social impacts. So to really drive positive change there, we really need to understand the decisions that we make in-house and how that affects all the way up and down the supply chain. And so it's similar across other industries. At BSR, I was able to work in, you know, apparel, and you know, I touched on the extractives too. I had colleagues who did. So we learned a lot from each other across those industries. But really working in food and ag, it's all about kind of getting back to that base, the foundation from which all food comes. And that's where I spend my time now, working across the different functions to bring that work forward and helping to develop programs and aligning that with the business so that we don't have these bolt-on activities, but rather we're just a part of the business flow.
So, well, first of all, I'll say thank goodness for Tufts University. I don't think we'd have a regenerative movement if it weren't for Tufts. So, you know, that, let me just state that there. A couple of our co-hosts on the show, like Jennifer Hashley and Lauren Abder, are also from Tufts, and had numerous guests on. The Friedman School has just done some wonderful things. But just returning back to your point about what Lee Scott at Walmart said, you know, those type of declarations can move mountains. When you're that type of volume, when you quickly become the largest organic dairy producer overnight, sales organization overnight, because you make those declarations, that's immense power. And so I wanted to just kind of expedite that to modern day, where as you mentioned, you're now heading up the National Organic Operating Unit at General Mills. You once described to me the relationship of those four different brands, the differentiated brands, the Annie's, the Muir Glen, the Cascadian Farms, and Epic, as a bit of a cousin to much larger General Mills. So what has your experience been, coming from the Annie's world, the differentiated brand, to work with this cousin, much larger influential cousin, but is there peer pressure? Is there capacity? Is there interest in looking at some of these discussion points around soil health, environmental best practice, correlation of human health, environmental health, and animal health in some circumstances?
You know, there absolutely is. I will say that becoming a part of the General Mills family, and it's been 4 years now since Annie's became a part of the General Mills family, I am so proud of all the work that General Mills is doing and has actually been leading on, but I would say leading on almost quietly, and this is kind of part of the challenge sometimes of there is a lot of great effort taking place within General Mills. And, you know, General Mills actually made a commitment in 2015 to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, science-based targets, 28% reduction by 2025 across the value chain. It's actually one of the first companies to do that across the value chain. And so, of course, agriculture is a big area of importance with that. And the recognition of soil and the importance of soil health as an opportunity in that reductions goal is where General Mills is really placing its bets. And so Right now, at kind of as part of our regenerative agriculture work, we've actually been working on that very much together. So the operating unit and the four brands and the corporate sustainability team at General Mills, led by Jerry Lynch, and we have also agronomists and soil scientists on the ground as well. We're working all together to figure out how we can continue to advance and elevate the conversation of regenerative agriculture for all of agriculture. And so, you know, Jerry and his team and the foundation of General Mills has made more than $3 million of investments in the Soil Health Initiative, so groups like the Soil Health Initiative, the Soil Health Partnership, the Nature Conservancy. They've also made a $4 million investment in pollinator health, primarily in partnership with Xerces, and that's both doing supply chain work where pollinator habitat will be planted, but also capacity building for Xerces to continue to do more good work. So there's a lot that General Mills is already doing, and so it's exciting. I mean, they have what's called the Global Responsibility Report, which is something that's completely available and everyone can go read it. And, it outlines the work across the major areas that is aligned with global reporting protocols of the Global Reporting Institute, the GRI, and there's a ton of information in there. The question, of course, and the challenge sometimes is like accessing the information. And, you know, coming from the Annie's background, we similarly have had those challenges too, where we have our 30-page report that looks like a 10K SEC filing and no one really reads, but it's available through the membership of which we're a part, the Sustainable Food Trade Association, and then continuing to look for ways of how do you actually get people to engage on some of those finer points that are found within these reports, because there's a lot of good work happening. So it's actually been an evolution of my own role, is how you continue to build programs, you know, track, measure, get your baselines, lead toward more progress, but at the same time, make it accessible and visible to folks internally so they know, and especially the marketing team, because they really know how to magically communicate things externally. And I'd say that's one of the big kind of insights and wins we've had on through our natural and organic operating team in the past couple of years, is really trying to elevate that conversation more through whether it be products or other ways in which we're doing social media and reaching out to consumers to talk more about what we're doing. So long-winded answer to your question on that, but lots of good work happening and much more to come too. And, yeah. And I'm really excited about the soil health work and where that will lead.
Yeah, let's drill down on that, because I think that's an important part, and it actually connects to what you were just speaking to of how to accelerate some of these conversations, how to incubate some of these conversations to get people to care about this. We have many stakeholders involved in the production of food and the sourcing and the purchasing of food. So what I have seen, what you've done at least successfully from what I've seen at different expos, different shows, is having an immersive and open forum to talk about the values of soil. I think you're even branding or labeling certain products that talk about soil health and soil initiatives. And in fact, you've made a huge step forward in taking some of these approaches, maybe bridging the gap between regenerative and conventional models, of providing tools like a regenerative scorecarding tool, which actually gives parameters to get producers to start looking at the values of investing in their soils, because in the long horizon, boy, that's just going to help those producers make more money, have more consistency, and probably have better profit associated to it in the long horizon, as these products are going to have more desirability and more and better margins. So could you share with the audience a bit of some of those programs you're doing to educate consumers and farmers of the regenerative scorecard and the soil health?
Yeah, no, my pleasure to do that. We're really excited about the launch of the Regenerative Agriculture Scorecard, and it really was a culmination of almost 2 years of work, to be honest, as we thought deeply about how best to approach this in a cohesive manner across our different functions within General Mills, and knowing that this focus on soil health is continuing to crop up, but knowing that soil is really a cornerstone to so much of what we're talking about, but we also want to be looking at, just like you were talking about, the economic bottom line for farmers too, and they're connected. And so we wanted to build a framework that focused on the outcomes we seek to have. So a lot of efforts to date are practices based, and those have a place, right? we need to understand the different practices. But what we know in agriculture is that if we, you know, preconceive what a practice should be in a farm, we might be putting that farm out of context. And we need to understand that context. And so by focusing on outcomes, we can bring together what practices lead there. And so in creating the scorecard, we really thought about the outcomes we were trying to achieve when it comes to the definition that we have come up with for regenerative agriculture. And that definition is farming that protects and intentionally enhances natural resources and farming communities. And so we really look at this as the opportunity to think about the farm and the farmer. And so looking at both protecting and intentionally enhancing natural resources and farming communities, our goals were threefold. One, it's to build soil health. Two, it's to increase above-ground biodiversity. And three is to empower farming communities. And this really gets to that economic piece. And we know that for us to be able to drive this work forward, our role as a company and as a group of brands within the company can do this in kind of three different strategies, three different initiative areas. So first and foremost, it's about the products we make. And I'll give a couple examples of that in a little bit, but I kind of want to run through kind of our thinking and our framework here is how we designed it.
Sure.
So we have to think about the product. We have to think about the supply chain, right? So we know our biggest impacts happen in the supply chain, so we have to think about our work to advance those three outcomes through our products and through our supply chains. The second is around policy and partnerships. Policy is incredibly important when it comes to the farm and food system and agriculture. And so knowing that that's so important, we need to be understanding the role that policy plays, both in influencing both the carrots and the sticks that policy brings. And so that's a role that we need to be making sure that we're staying on top of and looking at ways that we can partner with those who are really close to the policy to help engage on that area. And so partnerships are also critical because that's how we learn. It's the experts on the ground who can provide learning back to us and how we can bring that back to our own supply chains. And the third piece is around kind of education and inspiration. And this is how we reach out beyond our products and beyond the system of policy and partnerships to the people who buy our products. And how do we engage and bring some of what we're learning forward to them and to really get them to connect with what we're striving to do and so that they see the importance of it. And so those are kind of the three areas that we are building our work around. And what we have across the board for each of these is this open-sourced scorecard and development of standard protocols to make sure that we're ground-truthing our efforts. So the Regenerative Agriculture Scorecard is available online right now through the Annie's website, but also through the General Mills website under the Regenerative Agriculture section. And it's really about looking at how we can engage with farmers to verify the implementation of what they're doing, increase transparency within our own supply chain. It's intended to be a user-friendly tool. So it's not, you know, meant to be a laborious checklist. It's really intended to be done hopefully within an hour of time because it's a multiple choice assessment and to help farmers make progress toward understanding how their agricultural practices can lead to the outcomes of interest. So those three outcomes of interest that I mentioned, soil health, biodiversity, and empowered farming communities. So we know that it's still just a scorecard and it's not the actual measurements, which is why we also have starting to develop protocols to do the actual measurements. And we've made the most progress right now in the soil health one, leveraging the Cornell Assessment of Soil Health soil sampling protocol. And so that is what we are doing to help us ascertain, like, is progress being made based on the practices being employed. We need to develop ones for above-ground biodiversity and as well as one for the economic side of it, empowering farming communities. But the tool itself is based on 19 farming practices that really, based on all the research we've done, indicate that they help lead to these outcomes of interest that we're talking about. So we spoke to a lot of different people in the development of the scorecard. We referenced peer-reviewed studies. We've talked to folks at the USDA, the NRCS, farmers, scientists, and it's not meant to be an exhaustive list of regenerative management strategies, but really focused on the core set of outcome-focused practices by which farmers and farm workers can, you know, autonomously assess their operations. So anyone can use it, and that's really the intention. And we know that we need to improve it. So one of the things we're actually working on right now is kind of version 2.0, for which we're going to be going and soliciting feedback from farmers. We've already solicited feedback from farmers. We've done that through some of the pilots we have in place. And then we will be attending some farmer conferences this fall and winter to kind of host workshops where we can solicit more feedback to really make it even better. Knowing that it's not the be-all, end-all, and ultimately we do need to get to those actual measurements, but it's a quick, you know, user-friendly tool that can help advance the conversation. So, you know, coming back to kind of how some of this is rolling out, you asked about, you know, some of the ways we're talking about it. We're super excited about some of the announcements we've made in recent months to advance this conversation. So leveraging some of the work that I mentioned, we launched two limited edition Annie's Mac and Cheese and Honey Bunny Graham's products that proudly proclaim soil matters on the front of it. And they are direct farm sourced from two farmers. So the Mac and Cheese is from Nate Paul Palm, and the Honey Bunny Grahams is from Casey Bailey, and both of them are from Montana. And each of them is you know, using regenerative agriculture practices to help advance those outcomes that we talked about. And, you know, I had the pleasure of visiting with each of them last year and seeing what they're doing. They both use, you know, rotational grazing, both focused on keeping the soil covered, both focused on, you know, doing diverse crop rotations. Those are just some of the practices that they're doing. But we took the opportunity to talk very loudly about this on PAC through these limited edition products. And it's one of my proudest moments of working on these issues, to see a product that really brings to life so much of what we're talking about in partnership with Sourcing, who really led to finding who these farmers, and then to with our marketing team, who just made it all come to life through the design and the product innovation team to bring the taste pieces to life. So, I mean, through it all, we know how important it is to have the internal cross-functional support, but then really looking at how we can continue to build this out through different farming regions. So the products, for one example, our brand Epic is also launching the product soon in partnership with the Savory Institute to launch the Land to Market program. And so this will be a way in which they start to elevate the conversation as well. And they really truly have been leading this conversation since their founding, the Epic brand, which is a meat bar based company. And that's something that they've done through their partnerships. White Oak Pastures is one of their suppliers, and Will Harris just does amazing work. And then our brand, Cascadian Farm, has also been leading in this effort, partnering with the Land Institute to help commercialize Kernza, which is a perennial wheat and a wild relative of annual wheat. And they have very, very deep roots, which show promise to really increase soil health, increase carbon sequestration, improve water retention, and improve wildlife habitats. So, you know, each of these brands, each of our brands are really trying to elevate it and take it further. And we have more efforts in the pipeline. But those are just some of the examples of things that we have been doing in the past few months, but really grounded in an approach that is both inclusive and holistic. And you know, what I didn't talk about, and I think it's worth mentioning, is how that design, when initially done, is really meant to scale, so that we want any brand to be able to participate. So those outcome-based goals and the strategies and initiatives with the, you know, measurement protocol is something that any brand, any company can do. And that's why we're so eager to have these things be open source, because other companies can also take part of the effort and really truly start to engage in their own supply chains, in the broader system, to advance what's possible in agriculture.
Hmm. I'm glad you mentioned that too, that it's an open source program, because I was going to say, when you were describing that, it's not extensive, but, you know, I read fully through it. And what I was impressed by was if you're taking an iterative approach, it's a wonderful wireframe. It creates the opportunity to build from, to listen and get that ongoing feedback, and then scale it out as needed and as people use it for specificity, depending on bioregion or crop or whatever the capacity they're trying to extend. And I'll say, you know, great, congratulations, that's fantastic work to be able to start adding that nuance to product lines and adding this, almost like what we've done in wine and beer and sweets and savories, to put this on things that people don't even think twice about, either if it's organic or not, but that there's soil health associated to our specific farm. That is a wonderful, wonderful iteration. And the fact that you got those cousins, those families sharing information, well, even better. That's wonderful, wonderful work. So Shauna, for my last question, let me ask you this, more of a holistic, you can take it ethereal if you want, but more holistic conversation. You state in your bio, again, you state the way we manage agricultural lands is driving many environmental and social challenges. And I seek to create solutions that account for a more balanced triple bottom line, people, planet, and profits outcome. I care deeply about the food that ends up on your plate and work to create a healthy and balanced system for people and planet. So if you could share just more generally here, if you had that center stage at next year's Global Climate Action Summit, if it was you instead of Han Solo giving us the motivational speech about how ag matters so much, what would you say? What would you talk about the interaction of soil health, planetary stability, and human well-being?
Yeah, what an honor it would be to be on that stage. But but even if it doesn't, I mean, the thing that to me is so remarkable when it comes to food and agriculture is that, you know, agriculture is one of our biggest opportunities to make a positive impact in the, you know, as it relates to climate change. When you look at, you know, 1/3 of global greenhouse gases come from the food system, and 80% of that comes from agriculture. And so just that number alone is enough to give pause to say, well, if that's 1/3 of the problem and 80% of that's agriculture, what can we be doing to change it? Does it have to be that way? And, you know, I think that it's not, and climate change is all-encompassing, but, you know, you drill down deeper and you say, you know, 50% of our topsoil has been lost in the last 150 years. Those are based on management practices. A lot of it due to disturbance, high disturbance of the soil, tillage, and overuse of tillage, and more recently, chemicals, and the imbalance that creates within the biodiversity and the soil aggregation. We waste 1/3 of our food globally. So we put so much energy into producing food, heavily, you know, dependent on water. Water's another one, you know, 2/3 of freshwater resources goes toward agriculture. And then we waste 1/3 of it at the end of the day. So, you know, you start to look at these planetary impacts. And to me, those numbers, I realize, like, this is the scientist in me who's speaking, and they matter, and they matter to people who care about the numbers. But it matters to our entire humanity, because at the end of the day, these natural resources, which we take for granted, be it clean air, clean water, food that we nourish our bodies with to give us energy, to give us, you know, life, depends on a thriving set of natural resources. And we're chipping away at those, and we can change that conversation. And that's why these management practices matter so much, because, you know, life itself is a series and a cycle of death, decay, and renewal, right? And we all are a part of that. As humans, we're a part of it, as are all the living things surrounding us. And our natural environment is one that we can look to for inspiration on how we could do it better. I think that when we look at how we have kind of treated our natural resources, from ones of they're always going to be there, or worse yet, we just extract from it, and we start to change that to one of regeneration for how we can use and then give back. You know, when you think about soil and the opportunity to build soil, which is possible through the biomass and through the combination of microbiology and photosynthesis and the carbon cycle, these elements of life are something that we can help to make even better. And I think about food and something that we eat every day. We have a meal, probably three times, if not more, a day when you're snacking. Every day we put something in our bodies, and where that food comes from matters. And we have the opportunity through our food and through our food decisions to make a positive difference. And so by asking questions, by building stronger connections between farmers who are building healthy soil and the people who depend on healthy soil to eat through the food, those dietary decisions affect us and the planet we all depend on. And so I think the more we can elevate attention to the land that supports us and really, you know, scream from the rooftops, if you will, of soil matters, food matters, community matters, these things matter, and look for ways that we can make a difference. Each of us can, because we all eat. And I think that's what makes me really excited about the opportunity in food and agriculture, is that we each can make a difference. It's not just for the few. It's for everybody. And that's exciting.
That is exciting. Good stuff. Yeah, a nice description and answer. You took me a little ethereal out there. That was nice, but you brought me right back. Get me in those deep roots. That was wonderful. Good explanation. I'll pay to come see that event next year. So great stuff. Shauna, where can our audience learn more about what you're doing at General Mills with the soil program and around the regenerative scorecard? Is there a website that's the best place to find this information?
Yeah, we have information on our brand websites and on our General Mills website. So on the General Mills website, General Mills has a section on responsibility, and under that, sustainability. And then you'll find a lot of different sections, be it on climate change, ecosystems, packaging, and regenerative agriculture, and others. The Annie's website, annies.com, the EPIC website, the Cascadian Farm website, there's these, and the Muir Glen website. So there's each of the brands have a lot more details where one can go to learn more and get involved. So we're excited about some of the things that we're doing, and hopefully the website shares enough to kind of catch one's attention. And of course, we always have great people serving on the consumer relations side, so anyone can always reach out and ask questions.
That's great. I'll put links at the bottom of the write-up so people can get access to that information. And I think I heard you mention snacking somewhere in there too, and I think I've expressed to you in previous conversation my interest in the Annie's marshmallow treats. Oh, those things are so good. That's ridiculous. So I try to hone those down and focus on the other side, really anything with a soil label on, that's what we're going for. But the fact that we can get things like that now, and to be honest, the fact that we get to hear, we sit here and we listen, and I think people sometimes a woe is me type mentality with things, whether it's environmental issues or food issues or soil health. But when we start looking at that, we have some of the largest agricultural and distribution companies in the world talking about these things, looking to service the needs of an evolving consumer base and to live within the regulations and restrictions of planetary boundaries. We're going to find pragmatic solutions. We are closer to a solution than surely many last decade. So this is a wonderful evolution, and the work that you're doing within General Mills is fantastic, to your credit. So I'll just say that with looking at the Global Climate Action Summit, and I'm sure many of the conversations coming out of that were to get involved, to get out and vote. But Sean, as you said, I think one of the areas that our listeners or anyone can get out and vote with is with their dollar in the mm-hmm. food that they're buying, knowing the integrity, the quality, the differentiation of these practices and how much that will matter for a systems thinking approach, for your health, for the environment, for if there are food animals involved, for the stability of soil, water, all these things, these regenerative natural resources you so eloquently spoke of during our conversation today, how that is our succession plan and how that is so essential for us to be proper management of these practices, this bounty that we inherit. What an opportunity for us and for our generation. So Sean, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to share such wisdom with our audience. And I'll just say until next time.
Well, thank you so much. It's truly been an honor. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.